Hello, everybody, and welcome to This is the Pits, the podcast where we talk about Brad Pitt's hair and the rest of his body and career. My name is Michael Oberst, and that over there is Chelsea Greenwood.
Hello, everybody. It's so great to be here on this Sunday. I think that today is the Drunk Irish holiday. What's that called?
Oh, yeah. It's Straight Pride.
It's Straight Pride. St. Patrick's Day.
St. Patrick's Day.
Well, that is a joy.
Isn't it just like the worst holiday?
I mean, I am having a beer in solidarity, but I am not going to leave my house.
Yeah, but that's because you're an alcoholic, not because you celebrate the holiday.
Yeah, but I mean, some would call this the alcoholic's holiday.
Oh, so and Straight Pride. What's the difference? Yeah. So today we're talking about a movie called Babel, and it is a downer.
It's a downer, but it's a doozy, and it really stuck with me. I've been thinking about it a lot, which I think is a good sign for a movie.
Definitely. It's a good, I mean, it's for sure Oscar bait, but it's a good, still a good movie. I mean,
that's
I really
his whole vibe is Oscar bait, but I'm okay with it because he makes good movies, as far as
yeah,
I'm concerned.
Yeah, so how's your week been, Chelsea? Before we get too deep into this depressing shit, tell me about something nice that happened during your week.
Well, let's see. I don't know, man. I've been working. I don't know if I've told our listeners that I started a new job. I left corporate America. I lasted 3 months in corporate America before I got, before I needed to go back to production. And I've just been kind of going to work and, you know.
Well, that's a really fascinating story.
Watching Brad Pitt movies. I was really thrilled to watch this one.
I was nervous about watching it because I thought it was going to be a war movie about Iraq.
I also thought it was an Iraq war movie, and it's weird because I had seen this movie, and I was like, ugh, I'm not, I don't want to see a fucking war movie. But then it wasn't.
But it's, no, it's, I mean, it's, some of it's based in the Middle East, but it's not a war movie.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah, and I think that the movie would speak to the fact that we just assumed it was a war movie because it was based in the Middle East.
Well, 2005 is the year.
That it was
six.
Getting made.
Well,
yeah.
It was made in 2005, released in 2006. The director, Inarritu, has been – is that how you say his name? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I love him. And he has been working on the script for a few years. So, I don't know. It's like that time period is like prime war movie time.
Totally. We're in the thick of it. It's a really weird time, 2006. Before I get into it, though, do you have anything that you'd like to tell me about in your life that's exciting?
It's sunny and warm in LA finally. So, and
what
also
do you mean, finally?
I
finally, it's always sunny and warm in LA.
That is so not true. For the last like 2 months, it has been cold and rainy all the time. It hasn't cracked 75 or 70 even in at least a month.
Oh,
it's
man. We got up to 65 here. And I was so excited, and I was, like, shuffling down the street, listening to my music, like one of those fucking early iPod commercials, like, woo, woo, woo.
Well, you're just a silhouette of yourself.
I was a silhouette of myself. I was dicking and dancing around. I was, like, even said okay to meet a friend in fucking Times Square, which is the nightmare hellscape of the universe.
Wow.
But because the weather had changed so drastically, I got a migraine and had to go home and didn't get to celebrate the warm weather. And
aww.
When I woke up, it was snowing. So... Ready
oh,
for,
that's a bummer.
Definitely ready for spring.
Yeah, I'm super ready for it. I'm also ready to be back in production, too, because I'm in sort of corporate America. And basically, I'm not in production right now. And I have resorted to making slow motion videos of bees flying around on trees outside of my house.
I saw that.
And because I'm dying to do I'm dying to shoot something. So
come here.
See how long
I
last
have plenty
doing.
Of work for you out here, genuinely.
Oh, over there where you just told me it's like 7 degrees all the time.
Yeah,
and
but
I
not
just
for
told
long.
You it's like a nice 75 and sunny with not
yes,
a single cloud.
Yes, but the
in
payoff
sky.
Is better here. You know, the reward of the warmth. You just appreciate it more here. I know, having lived in both LA and New York.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the best and I know everything. That's what I want to tell you.
Well, that's what this podcast is about, is really about us knowing everything.
And being the best at knowing everything, even when I can't even recall the name of a hugely famous holiday within the first 2 minutes of this podcast.
Can't recall the name of that one of like four of the movies that we've watched. I can't remember the names
of
them.
Oh, six of them. This is episode 27. I fudged last week and I got a little trigger happy and I said that Mr. and Mrs. Smith was 27 when in fact it was 26.
Oh, that's super embarrassing for you mostly. But
Okay.
so should we talk about Babel?
Well, let me tell you about the world in which Babel premiered.
Oh, okay.
It's actually, there's not a lot going on, but there are hugely significant things that sort of shift the world to the way it is now.
Okay. And there's one significant thing that shifts Brad's life, but we'll get to that.
Well, there's so much to talk about in Brad's life. And
I know. It's just...
Let me just lay this out here. Okay. So Walt Disney bought Pixar from Lucasfilms for $7.4 billion. That is why we now have a million new Star Wars movies.
Wait, that happened in... I feel like that was somewhat recent.
2006 is recent. Like, we're in the world of our life now. In 2006, I'm living in Brooklyn, like, fucking and sucking and drugging and funning around.
Right.
I was an old lady, you know, I was like working full time at this point.
Yeah, yeah. You were basically a grown up.
Oh, big time. I look just as old as Brad Pitt did in this movie.
You look just as old as you do now. You're welcome.
Thank you. You're the best and everybody knows it. So what else happened? Oh, Cheney accidentally shot that guy in the woods, remember?
Oh, yeah, the fucking vice president. Oh, my God, that's so crazy that actually happened.
I know.
The vice president shot a man.
Just shot a random guy, a lawyer. So funny. Love that happened.
I can't believe that happened.
Yeah.
Have you seen Vice, by the way?
I haven't watched it yet.
I want to watch it really bad because I love all of the actors in it, and I think Cheney is so funny.
I hated him. I used to do all these paintings in college of him as a woman, as if that was like a bad thing.
Blast it. You got him.
Yeah, really, really was deep back
then. His worst punishment is that he could be a woman.
I was like, I would paint him with all these like big red ruby lips and like really sexual. Anyway.
That's a Trump too. People will like make Trump a drag queen and like Photoshop him as a drag queen and be like, haha, you look like a girl.
The amount that I hate Donald Trump compared to the amount that I hated Cheney and Bush is like insane. I didn't know I had the capacity for such anger and hatred as I do. Anyway, this is not a politics. If you can even call them politicians.
No, it's not a politics. And I don't think anybody truly knows how we feel about politics.
No, we shouldn't let anybody know how we feel. Anyway, so 2006, the Blu-ray disc was formally released in the United States along with the Nintendo Wii, changing the way that I worked out for an entire year.
An entire year?
Oh, yeah. Me and my roommates, we had like fucking, I was Wii bowling. I was Wii sportsing. I was Wii fitnessing almost every day. I didn't leave my house really a lot back then.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, wow. I remember getting the Wii, or I didn't get it, but like playing the Wii, doing the sports thing, and then I just kind of sort of felt like, so this is it, huh?
No.
So it's just, but it was it. That was it.
No, because were you the champion bowler of all of Brooklyn? I don't think so. You can't imagine the high I felt. My ball was golden. No one was as good as a Wii bowler as me. Okay. So
are you still, do you still have the touch? Do you still have the golden ball?
I don't have a Wii anymore. It was my ex-boyfriend's. My point is, I've never been good at video games or sports ever. And then all of a sudden I was good at sports and video games. Oh, what I would
give. Oh my God. Chelsea Greenwood. I'm learning so much every day. Episode 27. I'm still learning.
Yeah. I had a golden ball. Da, 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 da. Anyway, my last thing is that, okay, so the last like technological thing is that Google bought YouTube for $1.6 billion.
I feel like that was also recent.
Yeah, that happened, and that's not that expensive, considering that Walt Disney bought Pixar from Lucas for $7.4 billion. Like, think about YouTube, man. YouTube is the way of the future.
Maybe, but like, can you remember, because I don't remember, do you remember if YouTube had ads on their site back in 2006?
It didn't. It did not. And then it got bought by Google.
Google saw potential in YouTube that YouTube independently never saw.
Oh, my God.
And Google was able to grow it to what it is now. Because now it would sell for a fuckload of money. I mean, $1 billion or whatever this you just said is still a lot of money.
$1 billion is not a lot of money in that world.
In that world, it's not. Right. To me,
Instagram was bought by Facebook for $1 billion, too.
But same thing. Instagram, when it was bought by Facebook, that was like 3 years ago.
No, it was not 3 years ago. It was like 6 years ago.
Yeah, 100%. Instagram bought by Facebook?
Instagram was bought by Facebook when I started using it, which was like 2011, I think.
It was 2012. Oh, wow. So you're right. That was 7 years ago.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Now that we're in the early 2000s, it's like it's all one fucking time warp.
I sort of thought that the time periods would move slower because Brad Pitt's doing more movies, but I'm finding he's doing less movies and the time is moving faster.
Oh my God, time keeps on slipping. I'm in a real musical mood today.
Yeah.
Okay, two more things. Big things. So it was the start of the United States housing bubble when a total of 1,259,118 foreclosures were filed during 2006. Can you imagine? 42%
Holy fuck.
That was up 42% from 2005.
I a little bit wish that would happen again.
Oh my, it's going to, don't worry. But the thing is that the housing bubble burst, like the burst happened in the summer of 2006, right before this movie came out, starting like the full-blown market meltdown that happened that took years to recover from in
2007, 2008, yeah.
Now, bringing it to pop culture and slowly getting into Brad's life, Moses Bruce Anthony Martin, son of Chris Martin and Gwyneth Paltrow, was born that year, along with Suri Cruz, daughter of Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes. So we're having celebrity babies popping out left
and right.
You know
who else was born that year?
Hmm.
Their first baby, Shiloh Jolie Pitt.
Shiloh Jolie Pitt, the most beautiful child ever to grace the planet of Earth, was born that year.
It's fucked up. Yeah.
It is.
Shiloh was born May 27th, 2006.
So we went from 2005 with Mr. and Mrs. Smith, them like not even saying they were together, to them having a baby. I couldn't close the gap during my research on that. Did you?
No, I couldn't. I sort of was more focused on the movie itself and not so much Brad's life, but I did do a little bit of poking around about Brad's life and I didn't really see much. I mean,
no, he's doing so much at this time.
Well, I mean, I didn't see much about what I was trying to find, like, and I was trying to find that gap. But you know, what's hard is that, and this is something that we keep encountering, is that so much of his life is chronicled in tabloids.
Yeah.
And we don't have those, and those files aren't all online, or at least not the way that they're shown. Like the covers and the cover stories aren't always shown unless it's an actual story. People magazine has a pretty good catalog of their old stories.
Yeah.
And so does like Entertainment Weekly, but like
Entertainment Weekly and Esquire had some real choice. There were some great articles this week. I was in a real research hole.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there were definitely some good articles. One written by Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt himself wrote an article.
Let's talk about it. What's it called? Like 15 Things I Like?
He says, my list, 15 things I think everyone should know.
Oh, and they're so...
Number one, the drug war.
Oh, my God.
It's like he's so serious. He takes himself so seriously sometimes.
It's Angelina. I can hear her.
It's true.
I
Number one, the drug war. Number two, adoption.
Yeah, because we have to say that not only did he have his own biological child, but he also adopted her two kids, Maddox and Zahara.
Hold on. I also would like to read one of his 15 things that he says.
Please.
Because after the drug war and adoption, number three is Carol's daughter hair products. And first of all, what a big jump
Please.
From adoption and the drug war to Carol's daughter hair
products. Please read this line. It's and like, the who line the is, fuck do you think you are, Brad?
I know. The line for the reason why he thinks you should know 15. Carol's daughter hair products is because he says, for white people who might be having a little trouble with black person hair, Carol's daughter is a fantastic hair product. We got it for Z. Now her hair has this beautiful luster and it smells nice too. And then on to number four, a new paradigm.
Nature consumes and then reuses. There's a cycle to things. But it's just consumed.
Between adoption and a new paradigm is Carol's daughter hair products.
And then we go on to hear about the perfect mattress, marriage, which, hey, I remember this time. And he said, Angie and I will consider tying the knot when everyone else in the country who wants to be married is legally able. And I remember, but back before the world where gay marriage was an illegal thing, people were saying that left and right, and I think that they stuck to it. I don't think they married until after gay rights.
They did, but I think also, did it have that much to do with gay marriage, honestly? Or were they just so serious about themselves?
I've never
seen had to have a cause.
A pair of more serious people in my life. It is Absolutely shocking. Now, here's the thing. I was thinking about this because
I liked him with Gwen way more. He was way more
Oh,
fun
and
with Gwen.
Jen!
And Jen, well, but Jen also had a seriousness to her because they were so fucking famous that they had to be serious about that.
But they were so boring compared to this because, like, this is a treasure trove for the eyes and ears to read about. Because it's like, here's the thing. They're so fucking serious, but truthfully, he's doing amazing things with her. He's, like, building green. He's, like...
He likes starting charities and, like, building schools and
they're
shit.
Donating
I mean, it's great.
So much money.
I also just love that he writes... You know, one of his 15 things, building green. And then immediately following building green is the ultimate diaper rash cream.
Shiloh's 6 week old now. She's got a horrible diaper rash. Poor thing. Ugh,
this
who
is
gives
an
a fuck?
Esquire. Good God.
I know. You forgot about three things I've learned about parenting within the 15 things I like list.
True. That's cheating. That's 18 things, fucker.
Burping your baby. Great.
Really fascinating stuff. And then motorcycles. And then
two different kinds of motorcycles.
Yes, I have choppers. That's what he says. Think of the motorcycles. Yes, I have choppers. One is really low.
But there's then a big tire in front of you. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and then he promotes Jack White and the Raconteurs, which, I mean, I feel
he loves
that.
The Raconteurs. He's talked about them a lot of times.
I love the Raconteurs.
Who
but
doesn't?
Then he goes on.
Supergroup.
Also, he talks about the Jewish Museum. I mean, he's just, like, following his, like, gushing about motorcycles and how cool he is for feeling like Dr. Strangelove on a motorcycle, he then says, the Jewish Museum. He's just ridiculous. Anyway, he's so serious.
Directly because of Angelina. They're gallivanting around Africa. They've, like, birthed their baby in the Saharan desert because Brad claims because he was like, can you imagine the media circus of having a baby in the Western world? As if, like, that would be the hardest thing he could possibly do. So he goes to the Saharan desert so that Shiloh can have an African passport. And he was like, we're both very proud of that. And this
Great.
Is like, he's become an actual joke of himself. Like, the star of Brad, it's like, now we're just like, wow, 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 wow. Like, you fucking love the smell of your own farts. And you also love the smell of Angelina's farts. And together, you're just farting out babies. And the one saving grace is that they're giving lots of money away and helping.
Thank
to
God,
because
if they weren't, people would be like, you know, like, they would be. They're already the source of nonstop criticism, but they would be double the criticism if they were also doing nothing while, you know, like practically breaking a rib trying to suck their own dicks.
It's an amazing thing, though, too. I don't know if this happened to you. So Fuck Jerry posted a post about how Brad Pitt always looks like his girlfriends. It's something we've seen before. And now.
Oh, yeah. Fuck Jerry the joke stealer.
Yeah. Did you see that? Because I saw that because literally every single one of my friends, I think 15 different people sent me a screenshot of this thing. Which now post, even though fuck Jerry and fuck him, but whatever. At this point, Brad is now emulating the Angelina, which is dour, serious.
Mm-hmm.
He's producing a movie that she's in. That's the other thing we need to mention is that Plan B Productions is like popping off. He's producing The Departed right now.
Which won Best Picture.
Did it win Best Picture? Yeah, and Best Director.
And Best Director, and he was supposed to be in it, but he dropped out to do Babel because he really wanted to work with Inarritu.
And because his kids are all from different countries, and he felt a similarity in his life.
What?
Yeah, he was like, my kids are from three different countries, and the story takes place in four different countries, and so it like I can draw a parallel there that humanity is just the same, and like, you know, we're all the same, and some of us are just like have more, whatever. Let's talk about the movie.
It's time to talk about the movie. Okay, so maybe we should give a brief, for those who haven't seen it, because I think a lot of people haven't seen this movie.
Which they should. It's a really valuable movie to see. I really liked it.
It's a film. I will just start by saying it is a artsy, fartsy, partsy,
I don't know
fartsy
if it's artsy, fartsy. It's just a serious movie, which Brad has never done a movie this before.
Okay, you're right, I take it back. It's not artsy-fartsy. It is, but it is, it's a film. I mean, it's Inarritu, like, being super cinematic. It's very cinematic.
It's shot on film. It's shot in 35mm, except for the Brad parts. It's shot in 16mm, and it was all handheld. They didn't use a single stabilizer or
I know. Did you see that fun fact about the grips?
Yeah, Joey D.
Here's.
Joey D worked with us on When We Rise.
Wait, Joey D?
Joey DeAnda.
He was the key grip? Whoa. Well, okay, I love grips, and I always say this, that I love grips because
Get a grip, Michael.
they're just magical little creatures who can do anything. They know how to do every single thing. And if you need something to get done on set, you ask a grip and they have something for it.
Yeah, they know how to put things on things.
So yeah, someone's car got broken into on a shoot one time and we told the grips and they fixed it. And it made me so happy.
Like a happy little trove, jumping trove.
Yeah, so the story for this one though is that they were trying to do a shot where the director of photography was walking backwards, handheld, holding the camera, and he kept tripping. And Inarritu was adamant about not putting it on a Steadicam or on a dolly track or anything. It had to be handheld. And so the grips decided to just get a chair and have the DP sit in a chair, and four grips held the chair and walked backwards
I
while the
mean,
DP sat in the chair with the camera. And I love that. I love that image because it's such a simple and grip solution.
movie making at its
Yeah,
finest. It's funny
it's
though
true.
because you think about like the dolly grips, like a huge part of a grip's job is dolly and track.
Oh
So there
yeah,
was
it's
no
a whole
dolly and
thing.
no track throughout this whole movie, which is pretty awesome. And I will say, the reason why
Yeah,
it
because I
feels
fucking hate
so
it.
filmy and the reason why it feels so, I mean, outside of the storyline and the way that it's made, because it is really like edge of your seat sort of gripping, the way that the storylines kind of di like dwindle. The reason that is because he thought so much about that
Yeah.
feeling. Like he did that very, very purposely, and he worked his crew to the fucking bone. And himself, he said, I had three pains I thought were heart attacks during production. To make this film was to give birth to a boy with four heads. Painful. And then he
Wow.
said, I'm a torturer. He said, I'm kind of bipolar. When I'm happy, I'm the most excited guy in the world. And so he basically made everybody, like, he tortured everybody. And that's how he makes his movies. He did the same thing on The Revenant and 21 Grams. He like is obsessed with authenticity, and it shows.
It's annoying. I mean, it would be annoying to work with, I'm sure. Like I would
Yeah,
fucking
but
hate him
that's why
probably.
people want to work with him, and that's where that Oscar bait thing comes in, because it's like, oh, I struggled to make this movie. It wasn't just for
Like The
fame,
Revenant.
like
The
The Revenant.
Revenant, they were like, if Leo doesn't win Best Actor for this, it's like Leo, I feel like Leo wanted to win Best Actor so bad for The Revenant. In general, he wanted to win Best Actor so bad that he did The Revenant because he knew it would be a slog and that
Yeah.
it
It's
would
like
be
one of those
like.
things. It's like a rite. It's like a rite of passage to work on a movie so intensely. But what I liked about this movie too was it had the sort of Requiem for a Dream vibe where like everything starts out great, everybody's happy. Well, not happy, but you know, and then you just
Yeah.
know the minute you see them
Oh,
that
true.
this is all going to fucking fall right the
The
fuck
minute
apart.
you see the kids playing with a gun,
Yeah.
you go, someone's gonna get shot with that gun.
And you see the Mexican woman. It's just like, so the idea of this movie is like, you know, we judge people so quickly, and you know, some of us don't have the same rights as others. But like, you do that in the movie. Like, your process follows that, you know?
So this movie is about four different storylines that are all connected. One storyline is the starting storyline is about some kids in Morocco. I don't know if it's based,
It's
it's shot in
Morocco.
Morocco,
It's
but I don't
based
know.
in Morocco too.
Okay. So they're in Morocco, these kids who are like of a farming village, and they have a rifle, and they are supposed to use the rifle to guard their flock of goats. And
From jackals. I
from
stopped for a minute
jackals.
and I was like, what the hell is a jackal? You know, you hear about jackals. You don't know what a jackal is.
I
You
know a
kind
Dr. Jackal.
of it kind of looks, oh, good one, Michael. Kind of looks, in case anybody wants to know, it kind of looks like a coyote. It's like a dog, or it's like a dingo or a coyote. It's a wild dog.
Right, a wild dog for, but in Morocco.
Yeah.
And then the kids are playing with the gun, and they decide to like try to shoot things that are far away, and they shoot a there's a tour bus going, and they're like, I don't think these bullets work. Look, I bet you couldn't even hit the car. And then they shoot at the bus, and it does hit the bus, and then the kids run back to the camp, to their house, which is, you know, like a farming camp. And then that opens up another storyline, which is Brad Pitt is in that bus with his wife, Cate Blanchett, and the bullet that the kids are shooting at the bus shoot Cate Blanchett. And then there's this whole storyline that starts of Cate Blanchett and Brad Pitt while Cate Blanchett is bleeding out.
Might I just add really quickly that this is not happening in chronological order, which was another really effective way. You're kind of jumping around the time. Like, you understand how everybody's related at this point, but you see them before she gets shot. He, like, really fucks with the time of this whole movie is out of sequence, which is, right. I thought, really effective in the hauntingness of it.
Yeah. And I'm just saying the
plot
chronological plot points.
Yeah.
So that happens. And then, so she's bleeding. And then there's this whole storyline of, like, how is she going to, like, get medical help way out in the middle of nowhere, and then, like, all these other people on the bus don't want to hang out and wait.
Okay, stop, please. What the fuck? Those assholes. Yeah.
This Those fucking
woman
assholes.
Has been shot, but then also it's like, why don't, like, okay, can I, do you mind if I call out a plot hole that kind of pissed me off throughout the whole thing?
Yeah, go for it.
So basically, the people on the bus don't want to go. They don't want to stay with her in this, like, little tiny Moroccan village to save her life because they think that this has been a terrorist attack and they think they're going to die. Fuck these people. They're such assholes. But also, okay, this is now, over the course of the movie, this takes on, like, international fame, like, this story, this woman in Morocco.
Yeah.
She's rolling around on the ground in basic dirt. She, like, smokes opium to, like, take care of herself. The cops show up to the kids with, like, within 5 minutes, they're storming the scene in the town next, like, next door. There's cars and people with guns and, like, so much movement happening within 5 minutes. And I'm supposed to believe that she can't get out of where she's from until a helicopter comes?
Well, they're saying the town over didn't have a good enough doctor to do what she needed.
But what I'm saying is he had a phone. And they had police forces. Like, I understand that the doctor couldn't save her, but someone could have come and saved her easily.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Unless they cut the sequence, like, they fucked with the time so much that we actually don't see the kids getting arrested until after she's been medevaced out.
True. So, the quick point, though, that the other storyline next to Brad Pitt's is that those kids who had the gun, then they have a whole storyline of running from the cops and trying to, because it was an accident, and they're trying to, like, get in trouble for it. And it's really, their storyline is very depressing.
The whole fucking, every storyline is very depressing.
Honestly, Brad's storyline is not as depressing. I mean, it's stressful, but it's not depressing.
So the reason why they're on vacation in Morocco is to try to reconnect after the loss of their child.
Right. One of their kids died.
Yeah. Anyway, carry on with the plot lines. I just wanted to point that out because I was like, man, this is a near perfect movie to me, like, in terms of, like.
I will say, though, I think that it's a dick move that those people wanted to, like, leave her because she got shot. But they were scared because they're old.
Yeah, white people.
Here's a list of things. They're old white people.
Yeah.
And it's post 9/11, and they thought that this was a terrorist attack.
Yeah,
they
but you know what?
Attack.
Maybe, just maybe, you don't go to the Middle East.
But it's Morocco. It's safe.
But B, there was one shot and this woman is writhing around on the ground. What do you think? You're safer to, like, I would think that I would be safer in this little tiny town cut off than, like, driving through, you know, terrorist territory. I don't know. Whatever.
Anyway.
Meanwhile,
back in the States, they have two more kids who are being babysat by their nanny.
A little baby Elle Fanning. She's so cute. I'm going to do her all myself.
And they're being babysat by their live-in nanny, who is played, what's her name,
Amelia.
The actress's name is Adria Barraza. She's nominated for Best Supporting Actress for this role, by the way.
Killed it.
She fucking killed it. She was so good. And her Because she, the girl, is shot in Morocco, they aren't coming back to the States as planned. So he calls her and says, "You're gonna have to stay with the kids longer because we're stuck here." And she goes, "But my son's wedding is tomorrow in Mexico, and I can't stay. Can you find somebody else?" And they said, "No." Brad Pitt's kind of a dick about it. He's like, "No, you stay with those kids." And she wants to go to her son's wedding, so she decides to take the kids with her to Mexico to the wedding. And I don't know about you, that whole time that they were at the wedding, I just felt like something bad was gonna happen. The whole time.
The minute I saw her face, I was like, that was what I'm saying about the Requiem for a Dream thing. I saw her and I was like, oh, this woman's gonna look good all fucked up roaming through the desert. Like,
You're like, she, her face looks tragic.
there's
There's
so
something
much that
devastating
happened
going on.
too in Mexico, like during the wedding, because it takes a really long time for the bad shit to actually happen.
Yeah.
Like, and that whole time you're waiting for it, she like starts making out with a guy. There's like all this false stuff that you think is going to go bad, like he shoots a
Yes.
gun and da, da, da. And then what ends up happening
They're
is
gonna get kidnapped or
just for the
something. Yeah.
sake of speeding up this part,
Oh,
basically
yeah.
what happens is, to wrap up his storyline, her cousin Gael Garcia Bernal, who is, I love him so
I
much.
love him so much. And he's so good in Mozart in the Jungle. Have you seen that
I
show?
haven't and I've been waiting to, but my point of
You.
this is this:
Okay.
he is such a good actor.
He's great. And this, he's so fucking good in this.
Yeah, so he plays the brother or the cousin of the nanny, and he ends up basically like taking them ship face back over the border, drops them off in the middle of the desert. The two kids and the Mexican lady, she's like wandering around trying to get water. She gets arrested and deported. The kids are fine. They get found. Meanwhile, there's a third storyline, which is Japan. We find out later that the guy who supplied the guns to the rural place in Morocco was a Japanese hunter, a rich Japanese hunter whose wife had committed suicide, and he's father to a deaf mute who is obsessed with sex and
She's the
miserably
horniest person
depressed.
I've ever seen.
It's shocking. Now
She.
it's a hard thing
I
to talk about this movie because it's so
actually forgot about
serious.
this. She's so horny. It's fucking crazy.
All she wants is for someone to touch her vagina. Not just like kiss her, but like fucking grope her pussy.
And we are forced to look at her fucking muff for so much of this movie, and I didn't need that.
She was also nominated for an Oscar for this.
I know, and I'm like, for what? Just because you showed your beaver on the movie? Like, I don't want to.
I think she killed it, and I think also it speaks to him because he Inarritu, because he had to translate from his native Spanish into English, and then English into Japanese, and then Japanese into fucking sign language.
Yikes. That would be hard.
But so anyway, that's the three stories. Brad Pitt's and his wife end up being fine. She keeps her arm, which doesn't make any sense to me. She should have lost her fucking arm. The Mexican gets deported, and the Japanese story is a little bit more complicated, but ultimately she and her
That
father
one,
like connect.
I don't understand the Japanese story. I don't understand why we had to see it. It's just, it doesn't, I mean, it only vaguely ties into the other story because they say, because of the fact that that's where the gun came from, but I
Yeah,
guess it's
so
just
I
that.
want to read this quote because it's interesting because it's such a loop because the Mexican storyline and the Moroccan storyline are very, very severely connected. Like it makes a lot of sense. The Japanese storyline does feel a little bit thin.
Yeah.
So Inarritu said, this is a long quote, but I think it's a valuable thing to sort of
Okay, let's hear
understand
it.
his thinking of it because you're right. Like you could do away with that whole thing. That could be its
Yeah,
own
because
movie.
her horniness and like that whole journey that she had about trying to get fucked was
It's
irrelevant
uncomfortable.
to me
Okay. So he
and uncomfortable,
goes,
yeah.
Gonzalo Inarritu says he culled ideas for all four segments from personal experiences after moving to the US 4 days before 9/11. He said, "With my Turkish-looking face, people wondered if I was a terrorist," recalls the director, who has penetrating espresso bean eyes and a wild tangle of brown hair. It's the world we live in now, where terrorists have made xenophobia and racism legal. He then decided to incorporate plot lines based on the disenfranchised and dislocated Mexican nanny he hired in LA to care for his kids and the intense isolation he perceived in disabled teens he observed while publicizing 21 Grams in Japan. It was a cultural orgy, he says, of his decision to take such a global approach to filmmaking. My big fear was that it would end up like four stories about Moroccans, weird Japanese, drunk Mexican, and bad Americans. And I think that the Japanese thing was, if I were to say, I think that definitely was the weakest thing. However, I did like watching it. Like, I liked watching her. I thought she was a great actress. I could see the sorrow in her eyes, you know?
Yeah, I mean it was definitely very depressing watching her obviously grieving her mother, obviously in some sort of denial about it, and obviously obsessed with having sex when she also obviously wasn't really in a good place to be having sex.
Well, she felt ugly. She felt like a monster. And then she had that one night out where she did drugs. And then the guy she wanted to bone made out with her best friend.
Yeah, that was sad. But also I mean it was kind of sad, but the whole time I was like, why do I care? I want to know what's happening in Morocco and Mexico because that's relevant.
Yeah, those were much more
I think what it
obvious.
was is that no matter what happened in this Japanese storyline, no matter what happened, it wasn't going to affect what happened in the other storylines. The other three storylines, no way could it affect that. I mean, it was related because the gun came from there, but nothing would affect it. They wouldn't re-engage with it.
I know, and so I think that's a little bit jarring, and I think also it's what gives the movie that sort of artsy fartsy vibe that you talked about at the beginning, where it's like
Exactly.
it would have just been an intense movie, but now we're like having to think more. And I think the takeaway, I watched this with my boyfriend, and I thought about, we talked about it for a long time afterwards, and I thought about it like throughout the night, and I thought about it in the next morning, which is, I think, always a good sign of a good movie, because it is, you are supposed to think about what that means. And I think the point of him, so the last shot of the whole movie is the Japanese girl and her father holding hands. She's naked on the balcony.
I was
And
for a
then
second a little bit worried that they were gonna bone.
I thought that she was gonna have killed herself. So I was
Oh.
relieved when she was still there.
You were relieved that she was gonna bone her dad. Sorry, go ahead.
That last shot was, you know, the extreme backup. So like we were in really tight on them, and then we go to the extreme wide, and you see the all of Tokyo, and it was like this whole idea of like we're all suffering, and we're all like everything fucking sucks basically.
Yeah, that's true. But that's just good filmmaking, I think. That was just good cinematography telling the story, I think, is what that was.
Well, and that's what I really like about all of his movies, is like he really is considerate. It's very considerate. Like every shot I feel as though is meant to teach me something, which I appreciate.
And you know what I also liked is that bringing it back to Brad, which is a phrase
Oh.
that, by the way, I think we say that phrase the most out of any phrase. Bringing it
Yeah.
back to Brad,
We haven't even talked
he.
about Brad this whole time.
No, well, because I think that his performance was really good. I think
Really
that
good.
it didn't feel like, even though he's on the cover and he is kind of the central point of the story,
A little, but no.
a little, I mean, a little only because he's kind of going to be he's the catalyst for he dictates what's going to happen to all the other stories. But he doesn't have that much screen time. He doesn't have more screen time than any other story. And
And I think they both have a
it's,
total of 20 minutes of screen time.
yeah. And it's good. I think that it doesn't feel like a Brad Pitt movie. Like, even though he's a central part of it and he's on the cover of the movie, it's not his movie, and he doesn't carry the movie on
Not at
his own,
all.
which,
And it's
like we've said,
interesting. You said
go
last
ahead.
week, you were like, I don't think we're going to have to say, oh yeah, Brad Pitt's in this movie anymore.
I did, though. I
You
said it today. I
did,
said it this week. I
but yeah, but
said.
that's the thing. I think he's going to continue to do these roles. Also, going back to Inarritu, I think like the scene where she's like writhing on the floor, they shot that 65 times in
Oh, God.
112 degree heat. And
Oh.
so, but there was only one scene that they got on the first take, and that was when Brad cried into the phone, which fucking,
Wow.
I
Good
love
job,
it when
Brad Pitt.
Brad cries. He should always be crying.
He should be
I'm gonna
soaking
make a
wet shirtless
t-shirt.
and crying.
This is the pits. Brad always be bri crying. Always be crying, Brad.
But he was really bad when he cried in Seven. Not good.
I loved it. Loved it. Couldn't. Anyway.
The Oscars that year, something that we haven't done in a while is talk about the awards season around this time and sort of what movies were super popular. So this year, The Babel was nominated for Best Picture, so it is relevant to this movie. But so is The Departed, as we said.
Produced by Brad.
Produced by Brad and Plan B, and which means also produced by Jen.
No, it was his company now by this point.
She's still part of the company, though, currently, today.
Nope. She lost it in the divorce. I just read a whole article about this.
Oh, okay. Well, Little Miss Sunshine was also nominated. And Little Miss Sunshine won Best Screenplay, which was something that Babel was also nominated for. Rinko Kikuchi, who played the Japanese girl in Babel, was nominated. And so was, what's her name?
Amelia.
Yeah, Adriana Barraza.
And it won for Best Score. And it was interesting watching it with my partner, who is a composer. He, like, knew the whole score. He's like, He's like, I studied the score. He was like, this is the quintessential Middle Eastern simplistic score. It's really
that's
fun.
Cool.
Yeah.
I didn't even I wish I had noticed that. Like, I didn't think about the score, so I didn't really notice it. But,
well, that's the point of, they always say, like, you don't notice a good score.
Yeah, but when there's something that is really good, like, this was nominated also for Best Editing, and I would have liked to pay a little bit closer attention to the score and the editing so that I could appreciate what
paid heaviest attention to the editing. Really intensely, because of all that jumping back and forth in time and all the changing, like, from film and stuff.
Yeah.
And then music, that's a weird thing about my relationship, is like, I cannot watch a movie without thinking about the music now, which is kind of annoying, honestly. Should I break up with him?
Yes. I also, one of my notes that I wrote down was just, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God.
Yeah.
It was towards the end. I don't know what part it was, but I think it was when she was walking through the desert. This movie is just so
that
stressful.
Was so hard to watch. I was literally like, I was sweating everywhere and I couldn't move. And I was just like,
yeah,
that moment in the desert. Fuck. Really, so really, really get you. Have we ever seen him play a dad before? I don't think we've ever seen him play a dad.
I don't think so.
And I think the timing is really interesting. Gray hair. Well, we'll get there when we get to our ratings, but let me tell you, Mama likey.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what else Mama does not like when she talks like that. That was a nightmare, and I apologize to anyone who's still listening.
I loved it. I like that, too. I think he's embracing. He's like, look, I'm fucking, how old is he, like 42, 43 now?
He's 42,
He's like, look, I'm 42. I'm an actual dad.
Yeah. And I want to play a dad. His life imitates art, man. It's real crazy.
It's weird. The jump that is made from Mr. and Mrs. Smith to this is a pretty big jump.
I know. And then we have another Oceans. I'm like, I'm ready to be done with Oceans. I feel like that was a different time, a different life.
It's true. And you know what's funny, too, is like I was watching an interview like at the premiere of Babel where they were like, oh, are you excited for the next Oceans? And he's like, yeah, of course I am. It's just like. Out
summer
with my
camp.
Friends. It's fun.
Yeah,
it's summer camp. Totally. And they're like, when's it coming out? And he's like, I don't know.
Yeah, and I don't care.
He's like, but it doesn't matter. I just get paid a bunch of money to go hang out with my friends.
Anyway, talk to me about how much it cost to make this movie. I'm curious. They shot in 4 countries, right?
Yes. It says it only cost $25 million.
How much did he get paid for this? He was making $20 million a pop before.
I don't think he got paid $20 million for this. I think this was because it didn't make that much money either. It had a limited opening release, which it was only at like 20 theaters worldwide when it opened, and it made $389,000 its first weekend.
But that's limited.
And then it was open for a second weekend where it made like $500,000 for its second weekend. For
that's a pretty
also
good
limited.
Jump.
Yeah, not bad, but still limited. And then it had a worldwide open for $5.5 million, which is very low.
Wow,
but,
very low.
But it had already been out for 2 weeks, so
the numbers are a little bit wonky.
So the numbers are going to be low. And when that happens, I feel like what happens when a movie gets limited theatrical release first is that it doesn't always generate as much buzz as you want it to. Yeah. And it just like film nerds and critics and stuff will go see it and it'll make, you know, $500,000 or whatever for the first 2 weeks. But then like people have been seeing it and they're not really like excited to go see it in Kansas, you know?
Yeah.
Especially because it was opening against its worldwide release. It opened against Borat.
Oh man.
And so Casino Borat, Royale.
Oh, both huge movies.
Yeah. So those movies kind of obliterated this movie. So this movie was for film critics and film nerds and stuff like that. And it wasn't really like a Brad Pitt blockbuster, but it was, it had a good domestic gross of $34.3 million. So it made its money back domestically, which is good. And cannot be said for all Brad Pitt movies.
No, definitely not.
Its worldwide total was $135.3 million. And that's pretty good, too.
Pretty great.
So it made its money back, assuming that it was a $25 million budget, which is what I could find.
Yeah, I think I read that, too, actually.
Oh, and did you know the Tower of the story of Babel from the Bible?
Oh yeah, I was gonna ask you if you knew about that.
I do. It's. Do you know?
Yeah, but I'd like to hear it from you because you're a churchgoer.
I was also a kid, and the Tower of Babel is one of those like parables that they tell you just to, I don't know, just to illustrate something. But the story is basically that people wanted to build a tower up to God.
Right. Like, they wanted to reach God.
They wanted to reach God by building a very tall tower, which, by the way, those fucking idiots. They're so stupid.
I got news for you. When I was a child, I was obsessed with building a ladder to the sky so I could sit on a cloud. I still to this day wish I could do that, you know?
That is so pure. anyway, so God decides to scramble their words to make it hard for them. Like they were going to get close. God was like, oh, shit, I better do something. They're going to get me. So he scrambles their words, and now they have different languages. That's how different languages came.
So they couldn't. Oh, that's how different languages came. And so the movie is called Babel because they're speaking four different languages.
They're speaking four different languages, but they're all connected, and they're all.
They can all understand each other in their heart.
Yes, I think so. Something like that.
Beauty, beauty, beauty.
And the Tower of Babel never got completed.
Because they couldn't communicate anymore.
Because they couldn't communicate. And I think that this movie never gets – it doesn't – no one gets what they want.
No one's happy. That was the one takeaway from this movie. It's like even the like well-to-do white people are still miserable. Like basically life's a piece of shit and we're all living in it.
Babel is a good name for this movie.
Yeah, I think so too. So can I tell you what the ratings of the world are?
Yes, please do.
There's an interesting thing, which is normally I've started to read the Ebert review.
Yeah.
And he gave it four stars. He has a four-star rating.
It's in his, like, all-time best 100 movies list, so.
He loved it, but he didn't really say why. He just, like, gave a synopsis of the story, and then, like, that was it. The EW gave it a B. And it was literally two paragraphs. Normally it's like six paragraphs. This was like, I liked this movie. Could have been better. B.
Weird.
They didn't like the Japanese storyline either. IMDb gives it...
Oh no, do I agree with them now?
Yeah, sometimes I do agree with... They've been kind of spot on the last few weeks. IMDb gives it 7.5 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes gives it a 69. And so does Metacritic. Both 69, which I thought was kind of low.
That is a little low.
And Google users give it 80%, which is low for Google. Because Google's normally in the 90s.
Interesting.
Yeah, isn't that?
Well, maybe now at this point, people are using Google pretty regularly.
No, because I watch them. I stopped talking about them because they're always high. I brought it up specifically this week because it's not as high as normally. Normally, Google ratings are like 93%.
Interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. So now tell me, Michael, what did you think of the movie?
My rating out of 10.
Yeah.
Is that what you're asking me?
Uh-huh.
Oh, boy. Let's see. Yeah, I will give it a... I know. Well, now I feel like I need to see... I feel like I need to see all of my ratings of every movie in the past.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to give it a rating higher than something that... I didn't like, and I also don't want to give it a rating lower than something that I sort of didn't like.
Yeah, well, go with your guts. Just talk to me.
Well,
you're a human being, you know?
It's just me and you.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a 7.5.
Okay. Would you like to do any justification? You don't have to. Just curious.
That's just my gut. That's just like what I want to say. Okay, I don't know why. I feel like
that's a high score.
It's a pretty high score. Yeah, it's a pretty high score. I just didn't really get the Japanese storyline, and I felt like it was a little long, but I always feel like that when a movie is longer than 2 hours. So,
yeah, my guts say 7. I'm going to give it an 8 because I think that the consideration of the filmmaking was really great. I think that the editing was really great. The music was really great. And I thought that just the sheer effort of making it was worth a little bit more points. And I liked, I mean, I see what you're saying about the Japanese storyline. It didn't need to be there, but it was there and I did like it. I did like watching that.
That's fair.
And that's that's like a personal choice thing. Like, I get it logically. There's a few plot holes where I'm like, fuck this, which is why it's not getting a 10.
yeah.
And I also, you know, every movie that we've watched over 2 hours, I've been like dying for it to be over. And I thought this one was the perfect length for what it was. So
that's so funny because I literally wrote down a note that says I constantly want this movie to be over. But I think it's only because I was so stressed out.
Oh, my
and
God.
Like,
it was hard. That's the,
but
it was
like,
a hard
like
movie to watch. It's not an easy thing to watch.
No, it's not. It's it's the sort of feeling that you get when you watch like Kids or something.
Yeah,
or
Requiem.
Like,
I just kept thinking of Requiem.
Requiem. Or Black Swan.
Yeah.
Oh, I love Black Swan. Which is funny because Darren Aronofsky and Brad Pitt have creative differences. Brad Pitt was going to be in one of Darren Aronofsky's movies.
The Tree of Life.
The Fountain?
The
Tree of Life.
I think
it was The Fountain. And he didn't because they had creative differences, which is interesting because then he did this movie, which feels like a Darren Aronofsky movie.
Kind of.
It feels like an Inarritu movie, but, you know, anyway.
It's artsy. Yeah, I think this is definitely the most intense movie we've seen of his, for sure.
Like, real intense that causes real emotion.
Yeah. And I think he – okay, so now that brings us to Brad's performance, which I think he really did a great job. I'm going to give him a 9.
A 9? Yeah, you know what? I'm going to give him a 9 too. That was a great performance.
It was
one
a
of
great
his best
performance,
ever.
And I loved just a sprinkle of him, you know? And I loved – I just felt like he was in that role in a real way. And when I was reading an article with Inarritu saying, you know, they were like, it's so dangerous because, like – basically everybody else is unknown in this movie except for Kate Blanchett and Brad Pitt. And he was like, I needed to make sure over and over and over again that people didn't realize they were watching Brad Pitt. And I think that they succeeded at that.
I agree.
Yeah.
Cause he wasn't acting like he ever has before.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe it's because Inarritu really just broke him down as a person.
Inarritu broke him down, but he was a father, but also this was I think it was a nice combination of things going on in his life that really did it well. And I don't think that Inarritu would have let him get away with it if he didn't. So who's to say? Now, the question of the hour. Oh, I'm going to cut that out. Now, the question of the hour.
Chelsea just sang really loud. And so she can't cut it out because now I'm talking about it.
cut that out too, but I won't now that it's a thing.
Okay, I am going to give him a 9 for his looks because I think we're past the point of leaving room for improvement. I think it's all downhill from here.
Mm.
I think last week I gave him a 10. I think this week I'm giving him a 9 because I think he looks fucking good with his goddamn gray hair.
Damn, goddamn, does he look good with that gray hair? Because he still has the young face with the gray hair. Now he's old.
Yep.
Like in this world, in 2019, he's old. But then he wasn't old. I am not going to give him a 9, and I'll tell you why. And this is not his fault, but for the sake of the podcast. His under-eye bags were so fake looking.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
His wrinkles in his under-eye bags were so obviously makeup to me that I have to peg it down to an 8.5. However, if I were to marry fuck, kill Brads, of all the Brads, I think I'd fuck this Brad. Gray-haired Brad.
Should we play marry, fuck, kill of all the Brads? No, we should play that at the very, very end.
Oh, my God. We can revisit the Mary Fuck Kill. I feel like we've done a lot. I don't think this movie merits a Mary Fuck Kill, but I'm just saying, like, the next time we do a few of the Brads, I would like for this to be in the running because I would fuck the shit out of him.
Let's do Mary Fuck Kill of the nanny, the Japanese girl, and Kate Blanchett.
Okay. Well, I would fuck the fucking Japanese girl just to put her out of her misery, honestly.
I would kill her to put her out of her misery.
You mean you weren't turned on by that huge muff?
No, I wasn't. Like, she's straight up, for those who haven't seen it, she is at a fucking mall, like a shopping mall, and she goes to the bathroom, takes her panties off, and then goes back to the food court and just spreads her legs for guys who just all like stare at her vagine, and it's really intense. You have to look at it too, by the way.
It's
Anyway.
really intense, but I thought it was great that we also had to look at her vagina. Like, it wasn't
Oh,
alluded
really?
to. We saw
Oh,
it.
it's
I mean, I thought it was like a conscious and considerate thing.
I guess because it's jarring. It's jarring. That the point is that it is jarring
Yeah, it's
in
jarring.
public or in a movie. And so like we are, I guess, yeah, you're
Nobody
right.
wants to see private parts of
Straight
anybody.
giant.
Nobody wants to see like random sex parts.
Incorrect. I always want to see someone's dick.
Yeah, well, not on the subway, like a homeless person.
Okay, you're right.
I always want to see someone's dick too, honestly.
Like when a guy is in like running shorts and you can just fully see the outline, you're gonna look. I mean, I'm gonna watch to see
That's
it.
different than someone exposing themselves to you, because somebody exposing themselves to you is violating.
That's true.
Or
Yeah,
at
that's
least for
very
me. I
true.
mean, whatever floats your fucking boat, I don't give a shit. Anyway, I would fuck her.
Okay.
I would have to kill the Mexican, I guess. And I would marry Cate Blanchett. I mean, come on, you have to marry Cate Blanchett. You're gonna fuck the
Well, I'm definitely killing the Japanese girl because she is annoying.
Mexican.
I guess I would but the Mexican lady, she seems so nice and so sweet. Like I feel like I could really spend a long time with her and not be annoyed by her. Cate Blanchett,
She'll cook for you too. I don't think Kate cooks, to be
I don't
honest.
think Cate does jack shit. I think I would fuck her in her wound. I would fuck her shoulder
Ooh,
hole,
hot.
and then I would marry the
Sexual.
nanny.
Great. I think that's great. You know what? Maybe I'll marry the nanny and kill Kate.
Yeah, that would be great too.
I sure as hell ain't marrying the Japanese girl. Kidding me?
No, absolutely
Signing up
not.
for a life of torment.
No way. I would kill her. I would kill her, but I don't know if I'd be able to. She might kill herself before I could get
And thus concludes Babel.
Wait, let's do marry, fuck, kill with the two kids and their dad. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. What's next week? Ocean's 13?
Ocean's 13 with Joe. If we can get Joe, I think Joe's like traveling the world playing poker, so we'll have to see if he's even
Yeah,
available.
Joe's doing performances with Norm Macdonald right now, which is wild.
Yeah, he's killing it. So next week's Ocean's 13, and then it's the assassination of Jesse James, which I'm so excited about because it's my favorite time in history.
Yeah. All
I'm sorry
right,
for
great.
singing so much this episode, and I'll see y'all next week.
Deuces.
Deuces and traces.